Okay. My name is Ryan Benjamin. I am 42 years old. Today is August 24th, 2021, and I'm speaking with my grandma, Madeline Woodman. We're recording this interview in Hudson, Florida. And Madeline, my grandma, just turned 93 today as well. We have the same birthday. So let me turn this way. I think we'll both be able to hear. So we've been talking a little bit, but I think we're going to start with you telling me about some of your earliest memories. But first, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about your parents. So whenever you're ready, go ahead. So
my father was Jewish. It never really dawned on me what Jewish meant, and it didn't bother me at that time. His parents were from Poland, and when he was 5 years old, they went to live in London, England. My grandfather was a tailor. My grandmother had a haberdashery shop. They did quite well, worked hard. I never met them. The reason for that was that when my father married my mother, who was not Jewish, and she was the daughter of a Yorkshire coal miner, they disowned him because it was a terrible thing for someone who was Jewish not to marry someone who was Jewish. All these things I wasn't too much aware of. My first memory was standing in front of a building in London, somehow I knew it was London, with my sister, who was 6 years older than me, and a couple of cousins who lived in London. My sister and I were with my mother just visiting, and we were going out for the day, and they had got us dressed and ready to go out, and they were upstairs somewhere getting dressed themselves. And I got tired of waiting. It seemed that my aunt and my mother were taking forever. So finally, I sat down on the steps, 3 years old. And my sister she was so upset. She said, "You better not get that coat dirty," she said. "Mum will be very cross with you." And I said, "But I'm tired." She said, "Oh, you're always whining." That was my first introduction to my sister, because the age difference between us was such that we really were never friends at that point in our lives. And I was always, as far as she was concerned, I was always the brat. My mother she wanted to go into our little town with her friends. And my mother would say, "Take Madeline." And she would say, "Do I have to take that brat with me?" So I was the brat. But I have very good memories of that small town in the south of England, on the south coast, in Sussex. It was called Seaford. And it was a good experience for me. I remember my father taking me to see my first movie, which was a Walt Disney short. And I wasn't very impressed. And I remember he held me because I was just so little. And he didn't want me running around the cinema. I went to school there in Seaford. And I had many friends. And my father taught me to shoot at the age of 8. And there was a song. At that time, there was a country, I think it's called Ethiopia now, but it was called Abyssinia. And Mussolini had invaded Abyssinia. And volunteers from all over the world went to Abyssinia to try to help them. And there was a song. You want me to sing it?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I'm not sure that I remember it all perfectly, but it went something like this. There's something about going to Abyssinia, bring your own ammunition and a gun. Mussolini will be there, shooting peanuts in the air. Won't you come to Abyssinia? Won't you come? And that was the earliest that I remember that. And I don't think I was that good at shooting, but it was a very small tutu that I had. But my father was a very good shot. And I remember later on in life that I also, he would take me. But not outside, it was always indoors. So that's my earliest. That was in London, and at that time, I believe, we lived in Seaford, which is in Sussex, in the UK. When I was about 9, you want me to go on?
Yes, absolutely.
When I was about 9, my father got a better job.
Okay.
He had been hotel manager, but it was a very small hotel. And now he got this job of a much larger hotel. And so we moved to Lancashire, Morecambe. It was on the west coast of Lancashire, seaside. And it had, I believe, it had 60 bedrooms, which was quite a lot. Mm-hmm. We moved there. I started a new school, Morecambe Grammar School. I remember we had a Dalmatian. We always had dogs. And this Dalmatian, Bobby. Well, Bobby followed me to school, and I had to go on to school on a bus, but the dog would just run after the bus. And one day I was in class and the headmaster called me out. He was very nice. And he said, "What are we going to do about your dog? He keeps following you." And he had dog hair all over his suit. I felt so bad. And my father had to come and get the dog. I don't remember what we did about that. But I loved Bobby, and I wouldn't be cross with him. Mm. But the war came, 1939 in the UK. And the government came and took over the hotel for their clerical staff. So we had to move again. And my father found work in a hotel in a place called Keswick, which was in Cumberland, now Cumbria, which was further north and west. And I found out over the years the most beautiful countryside that you could ever wish to see. The lakes and the mountains. It was just beautiful country. I started a new school, And they put me in on a certain track. They had a track, and if you were smart, you were on one track, and if you were just so-so, and they put me to learn Latin, and I could not learn Latin, and I didn't see the good in learning Latin, which was half the reason why I didn't do well. So then they had to change my track, and I learned French. And I thought I was doing pretty well with the French. Until later in life, I went to Canada, Quebec.
Yeah.
Spoke my French. They couldn't understand a word I said. However, that's going ahead of myself.
Yes. So I'm resuming now. We were talking about how you then moved to Keswick in the beautiful Lake District there in Cumbria after your father had gotten a new job there, right? And this is during World War II.
My father never spoke about himself or his family, but from my sister I did get a little information. How true all of it was, I don't know, but I didn't question it. I figured she knew what she was talking about. And I went on, life went on, and I went to school. I had two very good friends there. We were friends all through high school, Joyce and Elsie. In the small town where I was living, if you weren't a local, you really didn't belong. And I was not a local. But these two were from local families. Joyce's family had the local laundry, and Elsie's family had a sweet and tobacconist shop. Mm. And so they were accepted as locals. So I was okay, I was in.
I see, and this was in Keswick?
In Keswick, Keswick, gotcha. In Cumberland.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good school, and I have many good memories of the school. We put on plays. When it came to choosing my English class, I chose English Lit, and we did some Shakespeare. We performed some of his plays for the school, and they seemed to go down pretty well. Of course, Shakespeare is always popular in England. One thing I do remember about my school, we had a big hall, and every morning we'd gather in the hall, and if there were any announcements to be made, they were made then. We would sing a hymn because, you know, the schools in England are run by the Church of England. So there is some religion, not a lot, but some. And so we would sing a hymn, and we would listen to any announcements. And hanging beside the stage, hanging on the wall, was a picture that Van Gogh had painted of the bridge at Arles. And I just loved that painting. Every day I was so happy to go in and look at that painting. And in later years, when I could, I now have a picture. Of course, it's not original, it's a copy, but it's of the bridge at Arles. I don't know why that was so important to me.
Is that the painting there on the wall there in the middle, or is that a different one?
No, I think the one in the middle.
It says the drawbridge at Arles.
Huh?
It says the drawbridge at Arles.
Yes, right.
Very nice.
That's not the same painting as this, because did several paintings.
Several different ones.
Of the same.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay, and so when you were there, you had moved to Keswick partly because of what was happening during World War II, you said in the, you know, the government came and took over that other hotel. Was there, did you feel any impacts or see the results of World War II when you were up in Keswick?
Well, yes. I mean, there was rationing, food rationing.
Okay.
We had to. It was difficult. It was a hotel, but we had to black out all the windows. There couldn't be any light shining, and we had our wardens that would come out at night, and they'd go around and check everyone's home. And they would check the hotel outside, and if there was a just a little bit of light, they'd knock on your door, and they'd tell you to get it fixed. And that was difficult because hotel people coming in and out, and
Oh, yeah.
but somehow we did okay. There was the food rationing, which had to be with when you had guests. People coming for 2 or 3 nights. I'm not sure how they did that. I was busy at school. I enjoyed my school there. I do remember one thing about school that always stayed with me. Soon after we had moved from Morecambe. They had at Morecambe, the school had what they called sports day. Every year they had this sports day, and then they would have no classes that day. They would have races and other athletic things, and it was just a big day for the school. Well, I was in Keswick and I was going to miss that. And so my mother wrote a note to the new headmaster telling him that I would not be at school on that day because I wanted to attend this. He read the letter. He said, "I cannot give you permission." He said, "This is your school now. This is where your allegiance lies. You go to our sports days, and you've got to forget about that school." Well, I was very upset.
Yeah.
And my mother said, "Well," she said, "we're going to go into Morecambe that day, and we're going to take you with us." So off I went with them. And the next day, I went back to the school in Keswick. And when I put my face in the door, I was told to go to the headmaster's office,
Sure.
which I did. Oh, I was scared. And he was a big, tall man, and here I am,
Right.
little kid.
Do you remember his name, the headmaster's name?
Yes, Mr. Howe, Howe.
Mr. Howe.
And he was a very I think he probably had many letters after his name. And we called him the boss. And I don't know if he knew that or not. But so I went to his office and he said, "You know, I told your parents that I could not give you permission to go to your old school." He said, "This is your school now." He said, "I want you to go home and bring either your mother or your father back with you. And you cannot come back to school until you do that." And I don't know if I was more afraid of my parents or you know, the headmaster. Anyway, I went home and my mother was very upset. She said, "What does he think he's doing?" And my father said, "Calm down. We have to abide by the rules, and in a way, I can understand what he's saying." And of course, the whole thing was smoothed over, and we never did do that again. And I learned a lesson from that. I really have, that you have to have your allegiance right here and now where it is. You can't be going back and trying to take care of things that are gone. You know, today is the day. And he was a good teacher. He was a good man. And he used to lie. It was a small high school, small town. There was about 400 kids, I guess. The first day of every term, he would line us all up outside in front of the school, and he would shake hands with everyone, and he would say our names. 400 kids.
Wow.
And sometimes, if he couldn't remember, you'd stand there with him holding your hand, looking at you, and you wanted to tell him, but he would say, no, don't tell me. And somehow he came up with that.
Uh-huh.
And I think the kids, we liked that.
Appreciated
the
that.
Fact
yeah.
that he took time to see who we were. You know, we weren't just a face and a name. It was a good school. Oh, and it was during the war. And they decided that we needed air raid shelter. Not exactly a shelter, but you know, you dig the...
Like a bunker?
A bunker thing.
Okay.
But of course, the girls don't do that sort of thing.
Mm.
So the boys had the job of digging.
Oh, okay.
And they did.
Wow.
And they dug these, and we used to have practices going out of the class and getting in there. And in later years, they were able to take a lot of this and make a swimming pool. And the boys actually dug the hole for the swimming pool. So I'm glad I was a girl.
Right, you got out of that part. Huh.
It was a good school. Another thing about the war, we had gas masks. And these gas masks were carried in a little box. And we carried these gas masks in this box everywhere. No matter where we went, they went with us.
Hmm.
We never knew if the Germans were going to use the gas.
Oh, wow, that must have been scary.
And actually they didn't, but
right.
It was a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And we it was there. I mean, when you sat down to eat, it was right there.
Wow.
You know, if you went to bed, it was beside your bed.
Mm.
But it was just something that we didn't really think about too much.
Wow. And how
you
long?
You couldn't let things bother you
well,
like that.
Yeah.
The war went on for 6 years in England.
Did you have that? How long did you have the gas masks
for
with
6 years.
6 years.
No, it wasn't right at the very beginning. Okay. It was probably 5 years.
Okay.
And then my chemistry teacher decided he was going to test these to make sure that they worked. And he had this sort of cupboard where he put some gas in there.
Oof.
And one
yeah.
at a time, we put our head in there.
Oof.
And I put my head in, and I couldn't get my head out quick enough. It was terrible.
Oh.
So my gas mask definitely was faulty.
Oh, no.
And they had to get me another one.
Yeah.
But it was good that we tested them.
Sure.
Because, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And then, of course, when the war ended, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
We had a big party. I think I was 17, and they were going to have a party in the town, a dance. And my mother did not want me to go.
Oh.
She said, no, I don't want you to go. They're going to be rowdy, they're going to be drinking, they're going to be this, they're going to be that. And I think that was one of the few times that I snuck out and went to the I think it was what they called the drill hall where they held it.
Okay.
And I just joined in and was happy with everyone.
Well, and you were 17. Would this have been, you know, in America it might be your junior or senior year of high school, but in where you were you still in high school at 17?
I graduated from high school when I was 17. You could go on, it was like community college. You could go on 2 more years preparing you for college. But I was not on the college track.
Right.
And I guess they decided that that wasn't for me.
I see.
No one sat me down and talked to me about it. When I talked to my father, I said I would like to be an architect. And he said, well, you're not very good at math. You have to be. No one sat me down and said, if I could be better. If I really thought about it, no one did. So I just thought, well, I'm not good at math, so that's it.
That was it, huh? Okay. And do you have a distinct memory of when you found out that the war was coming to an end?
That the war?
Yeah, do you have a memory of finding out when the World War II was over?
Oh. Well, I tell you, we were allowed to stay up. There was every night at 9 o'clock, there was a radio station, because we had no TV. And there was this radio station which would tell, unfortunately, how many planes were shot down and what was going on. And of course we followed that. And then D-Day is when the British and the Americans, but also all these other countries who had people in the UK, like the Polish and the Free French and many other countries, and they all got together and they invaded France. And we went in at many different parts in France, so it wasn't one part. And evidently the Germans were not prepared. They thought we were going to go to another part. Instead, we went in about 5 different places. And we just walked in and walked through. It wasn't that easy, but Germany wasn't really prepared. And then the Russians were threatening from the other side. And, oh, that's right, now I remember, Hitler could at one point have walked right through England because we didn't have defenses. Instead, he chose to attack Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where he made a mistake.
That's, many people have made that mistake.
Yeah. So, and then we were able to invade Europe, and Russia invaded from the other side, and Germany just
eventually
had to give up.
But and you know, you mentioned you were 17 when they had that celebration in town that the war was over. Was that during your senior year of high school, your last year of high school? Okay.
Right. Well, it was, because I know the war, I forget when the peace was declared, but it was very shortly around the time that I that I left high school.
Okay.
That
I see.
Can't think of the right word.
Graduated.
We didn't graduate, we just left.
You just left, yeah. Did they have a ceremony, you know, where they gave you a diploma or nothing? None of that. It was just kind of like going from 7th grade to 8th grade. You're just moving on.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And no big deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was, that was life. That was
sure.
the way it was.
Yeah.
And then my father, who was very successful with the hotel, and he wanted me to follow in his footsteps. And I had been doing in various departments in the hotel. During my vacation times, I would work during the summer. One time I remember he had me working in the dining room. Now, our dining room was very busy because we had these bus loads of people coming to the Lake District, and they would come to our hotel for lunch. And so he wanted me to work for a while as waitress, which I did. Well, these waitresses, they were older than me and they could run circles around me. I tell you, that was a very hard job.
Yeah.
On your feet all the time. I wouldn't want to have to do that as a for a living. But it was good for me to learn the different things. And there was another thing that we had a small ballroom. And we didn't have a band, but we had records. And Dad would let me choose some records, and then we'd play them Saturday night. And some of the, there was a local arm of the army who was in the town, and Dad let me take care of the music, and these guys would come in and they'd have maybe a local friend with them, girlfriend, and that's what my duty on Saturday nights was to do that. It was good, but I was too young.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I wasn't interested in any of these guys.
I see.
But they, and some of them were Americans, by the way. We didn't get many Americans in Keswick because there really was nothing there that interested them.
I see.
There were two or three who loved the surrounding country and they came for that. But the ones who came who wanted to spend their leave in some bright place, they didn't come to Keswick.
I see, okay, well. And then, so obviously your father was very entrenched in the hotel industry, being very successful, and it sounded like he wanted that life for you as well, to kind of follow in his footsteps. Can you tell me a little bit about you know, some of the training that you did in the hotel industry?
Well, there was a new program started up in Glasgow, which wasn't that far from us. It was 120 miles. And it was the Hotel and Catering School. And it was they went through everything, certain cooking, bookkeeping, hotel law, as it was in the UK, and a lot of other things. And I was there for 2 years. I didn't particularly care for it, but I didn't hate it. I just went along with it. And then when I finished, my father had somehow had some connections, and he found a program where it was an exchange student, and I could go to Switzerland for a year, and a Swiss student would come to England somewhere.
I see.
And I did that because in Switzerland, a lot of the hotels have a summer season, and I went to two, And I went to one, the first one was in Grindelwald, and it was the Hotel Belvedere. And they were lovely people, and everyone there was very nice. And they all spoke English. I didn't learn any other language, you know, but I did learn a little bit about hotels.
I see.
But then
was this time after Glasgow, or in, kind of in between time in Glasgow? You went to Glasgow and then to Switzerland?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the other 6 months I was in, they call it Geneva. They have another name for it, and I forget what it was, but it was on Lake Geneva, and it was part hotel and part, there were some wealthy people who stayed there all the time. They weren't ill, they were just wealthy and they wanted to be waited on, so that was interesting. And that's where I saw them, women with bare feet stamping the grapes. And that to me was, I thought that was neat, you know, to have them doing that. It's an experience that you don't have every day. And I liked Switzerland very much. The people were very nice. And at least there I was speaking a little French. They were able to understand what I was saying, although everyone speaks English. And that's the problem. You kind of expect them to speak English, but they were very nice and they did encourage me to learn as much French as I could, which helped. So I'm trying to think what I did after that. Oh, my parents were having problems, my mother and father. And my mother decided, they had separated, but it was a small town. And small towns can be very mean. Mm-hmm. And so my mother decided to go to London. And she expected my sister and me to go with her. And so I went. I talked to my father, and he said there was always a place for me if ever I wanted to go back. And he understood. I had met Lawley during the war. She had been separated from her. She was Jewish, German. And she'd been separated from her parents. And so she was living with a Jewish family who came to live at the hotel, and that was how I met Lawley. And towards the end of the war, Lawley had been able to get over to America to join her parents. And we continued to talk to each other, and she wanted me to come see her. And I said, well, I'd have to work. So I went to the U.S. Embassy and I got a visa and I could work. It was no problem. So I came over. And the idea was that I was going to be just for 1 year.
Just for 1 year.
Just
right.
1 year.
Right.
And it was good. I mean, I learned a lot. I lived in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't lived in a big city in England, I liked it. I met some good friends, made some good friends there. And of course, Lawley was there. I worked in a hotel over there.
Mm-hmm.
But the hotels in this country are not at all like the hotels in the UK. Not at all.
Right.
But that's another story.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have that was, we've gotten a lot of good material. We're reaching the end of our allotted time period. So that was a brief synopsis of your life in England. But there's so much more to talk about, and I'm sure we'll do at least a few more of these, maybe even before I leave to go back up to North Carolina. So, but I'll end this here, just so that we don't run out of time, and then we can do some more.